asked her what the danger of that was. Since they couldn't get out, and as long as I didn't let them reach through an open window to grab me, what did it matter how many abandoned cars I passed along the road? Metz reminded me that a trapped G was still able to moan, and therefore still able to call for others. Now I was really confused. If I was going to waste so much time ducking a few back roads with a couple of Zach-filled cars, why was I heading for a freeway that was sure to be jammed with them? "You'll be up above the swamp," she said. "How are they going to get you?" Because it was built several stories above the swamp, this section of the I-10 was the safest place in the whole basin. I confessed I hadn't thought of that. She laughed and said, "Don't worry, honey, I have. Stick with me and I'll get you home." And I did. I stayed away from anything even resembling a road and stuck to as pure a wilderness track as I could. I say pure, but the truth was you couldn't avoid all signs of humanity or what could have been humanity a long time ago. There were shoes, clothes, bits of garbage, and tattered suitcases and hiking gear. I saw a lot of bones on the patches of raised mud. I couldn't tell if they were human or animal. One time I found this huge rib cage. I'm guessing it was a gator, a big one. I didn't want to think about how many G's it took to bring that bastard down. The first G I saw was small, probably a kid. I couldn't tell. Its face was eaten off. The skin, nose, eyes, lips, even the hair and ears. Not completely gone, but partially hanging or stuck in patches to the exposed skull. Maybe there were more wounds, I couldn't tell. It was stuck inside one of those long civilian hiker's packs, stuffed in there tight with the drawstring pulled right up around its neck. The shoulder straps had gotten tangled on the roots of a tree. It was splashing around, half submerged. Its brain must have been intact, and even some of the muscle fibers connecting the jaw. That jaw started snapping as I approached. I don't know how it knew I was there. Maybe some of the nasal cavity was still intact. Maybe the ear canal. It couldn't moan. Its throat had been too badly mangled, but the splashing might have attracted attention, so I put it out of its misery, if it really was miserable, and tried not to think about it. That was another thing they taught us at Willow Creek. Don't write their eulogy. Don't try and imagine who they used to be, how they came to be here, how they came to be this. I know, who doesn't do that, right? Who doesn't look at one of those things and just naturally start to wonder? It's like reading the last page of a book, your imagination just naturally spinning. And that's when you get distracted, get sloppy, let your guard down, and end up leaving someone else to wonder what happened to you. I tried to put her, it, out of my mind. Instead, I found myself wondering why it had been the only one I'd seen. That was a practical survival question, not just idle musings, so I got on the radio and asked Metz if there was something I was missing here, if maybe there was some area I should be careful to avoid. She reminded me that this area was, for the most part, depopulated because the blue zones of Baton Rouge and Lafayette were pulling most of the G's in either direction. That was bittersweet comfort, being right between two of the heaviest clusters for miles. She laughed again. "Don't worry about it. You'll be fine." I saw something up ahead, a lump that was almost a thicket, but too boxy and shining in places. I reported it to Metz. She warned me not to go near it, keep on going, and keep my eyes on the prize. I was feeling pretty good by this point, a little of the old me coming back.